Blog Talk Radio.
Shut off. How about that? I remember I called him Gucci Man once, and I got like 13 angry tweets. He's like, "It's Gucci Mane. You gotta say Mane. It's not Mane. It's not Man. It's Mane." So just letting you know, Kyle. Just say Gucci Mane from now on. I was like, "Damn, all right, dude." The same thing happened with. There's a few things. Few like pronunciations where people were like, no, you can't say it like that. Another one was Oregon. I used to say Oregon, and people were like, you don't say Oregon, you say Oregon. You gotta say Oregon. I was like, okay, I'll say Oregon. And then there is Nevada. You can't say Nevada. If you say Nevada, people from Nevada say, bitch, you gotta say Nevada. And so I started saying Nevada. You guys like my stories? I got some superb stories here to start the show. All right, first and foremost, let me just catch up here on the fuck's happening with the stories that are right in front of me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Of course I'm missing one. Because what would a show be without a significant number of fuck-ups? I'll have to try to iron that out during the break. But first, let me catch you up on a little update on a story, and then we'll jump right into the amazing stuff from today. No teases today, because we are packed, jam-packed, wall-to-wall. So next week, I am not here. There is no show next week. So it's going to be weird, man. It's going to be weird. I don't know the last time I went a full week without doing a show, but that's what it is next week. I'm going to try to squeeze in some extra content this week. There will still be stuff uploading on the YouTube channel, but there is no show next week. So I don't know if that's happy days or sad days or whatever it is, but it is what it is. Okay, so first let me give you an update here with Rush Limbaugh. So yesterday we covered the story of Rush Limbaugh saying that hurricanes are a liberal hoax perpetrated by big science. Again, as if these things actually exist. Well, guess what? He's evacuating southern Florida. Rush, what happened, buddy? He just did the rant. He just did it.
Yeah, the hurricane warning is a problem with these hurricanes.
He always talks like he's got a cheeseburger in his mouth.
These hurricane warnings, think about these hurricane warnings, it's an attempt to create panic to try to push the climate change agenda. And think about the fact that you can't even buy any water bottles around here. I mean, there were water bottles on the shelves, and now there's no water bottles.
Yes, because there are warnings about a hurricane because there's a fucking Category 5 hurricane headed straight at your face. That's why there are warnings, and that's why people are buying shit. Because they want to make sure they have the supplies they need to, you know, survive and whatnot. And then there's mandatory evacuations. There's a fuel shortage. She thinks it's all a hoax. It's all a conspiracy. And I love how the stores that, like, think about what happened with Hurricane Harvey. Sure, the store's shelves were empty, but then those stores got flooded and destroyed. Was that part of the whole conspiracy? Was it part of the conspiracy for the hurricane to actually hit and then for there to be massive flooding? And by the way, he even mentioned Harvey. That's how stupid he is. He brought up Hurricane Harvey while making the point that these hurricane warnings are a massive liberal hoax. Okay, but the point you raise would disprove your thesis. The fuck is wrong with you? So he announced on his show yesterday.
We're not gonna have a show for a little bit here, but we'll be back at some point, and we're gonna have to evacuate South Florida.
Wait, what? What happened? What happened, buddy? Have the courage of your conviction.
Well, there are legal issues. We can't for legal reasons. We can't.
Oh, really? Legal reasons? What the fuck you think is gonna happen if you start? If you keep doing your show out of Southern Florida, the police are gonna come arrest your fat millionaire ass in the middle of a fucking Category 5 hurricane. It's not gonna happen. So what do you mean legal issues? I'll tell you. He's an idiot, but he's not that big of an idiot. He knows this shit is going to hit, and his whole shtick of being Mr. Conservative, Mr. Right-wing douchebag on his radio show, yeah, he draws a line when it comes to his life being on the line. But, of course, the reality is he just convinced a whole bunch of old far-right white men to not evacuate South Florida. Any old far-right white man who listens to Rush Limbaugh in South Florida is not going to evacuate now because of Rush Limbaugh. So he drops a fucking stink bomb, and then he's like, I'm out. You're putting these guys' lives at risk. Now, thankfully, there's only a grand total of negative 82 people that listen to Rush Limbaugh, so it's not that many people we have to worry about. But there are going to be many that stay back, and there are going to be many old far-right white men who do that in South Florida. And even though the whole show is based on me despising and debunking old far-right white men, I don't want them to die. I don't want anybody to die. So, I mean, what a douchebag he is, man. He does his whole rant. It's all a hoax. Anyway, I'm out. I don't want to get hit by the hurricane that I just said was a liberal conspiracy. Just remember this story next time you listen to, you know, some conservative commentator boldly and confidently proclaim something. That when push comes to shove at the end of the day, they might act very differently from the worldview that they're espousing because on some level, even they know they're massively full of shit. Okay. Now, bitch boy Donald Trump, listen to this. So I have a story here that really highlights the importance of the media. Trump was so happy with coverage of Dem debt deal, he called Pelosi and Schumer to gush. What? Okay, so for those of you who don't know, Trump got together with Chuck Schumer recently, and what they did is they ironed out a bill, short-term bill, but it was for disaster relief funding. It was for a 90-day extension of the day-to-day funding of the government, and it was for the debt ceiling. Now, for the debt ceiling, the conservatives like to huff and puff when they're not in power, and they love to say, oh, debt ceiling, it's terrible. We're not going to raise it. Why should we raise it? We should stop spending this money that we don't have. That's what they say, at least when the Democrats are in control. But the reality is the debt ceiling is about money that we already spent. So the debt ceiling is just saying, are we going to pay back the debts we already accrued or not? So if you say no to that, you spark a global depression. It's not a question. That's what would happen. So under the Democrats, they always make this big stink about, we got to get our spending under control, and they act like that's not what the debt ceiling is. Under Republicans, they're more reasonable because they say, well, we're not going to, if we spark a worldwide depression under a Republican president, then the Republican president's going to be blamed, our party's going to be blamed, and we're fucked. So they want to make a deal on the debt ceiling under Republican presidents. Well, it was Chuck Schumer, the Democrat, the Democratic leader, who got together with Trump, and they got a short-term raise of the debt ceiling. And there's also talks now about eliminating the debt ceiling because we have to come back to this every couple of years to raise it to try to remind the world, hey, it's okay, we're going to pay back our debts. So they're talking about maybe eliminating the debt ceiling, Trump and Democrats. They did a short-term debt ceiling deal and they got disaster relief funding and day-to-day funding for the government. So it's a bipartisan thing that's actually not horrendous for once. Usually when it's something's bipartisan, they're agreeing to serve Wall Street and screw you over. But it's just like a minor victory, you know, for just kind of keeping everything going normally and doing some disaster relief funding. Well, this is the first positive press that Trump's gotten in a long time. So as he sits there and watches cable news, which he does all fucking day, he's like, oh, tremendous, believe me. Oh, my God, this is, everybody loves this. Trump and the Democrats working together. Unbelievable. So he's getting positive coverage. He loves it. So he calls up Schumer. He's like, hey, Chucky boy, we're getting tremendous coverage, unbelievable coverage, I have to tell you. So this is great. I love this. So think about that. Here you have the first little bipartisan thing that's actually not crazy that they did together. And Trump loves it because he loves the media's reaction. That goes to show you how powerful the media is and why they need to act responsibly and they need to do their job properly. Because think about the last time Trump got, fawning praise from the media. You remember when that was? When he bombed the Syrian government. That's the last time. Remember when he bombed the airport? You had, I think it was Van Jones who said, he became president tonight. Excuse you? So-called left commentators, so-called, progressives, were like, oh, yes, this is Trump rising to the situation. You're not a serious person unless you start bombing targets and bombing people that haven't attacked us. So when he attacked a Syrian airport, which, by the way, is de facto acting as the air force of ISIS, because the Syrian government is fighting ISIS. When he did that, that's when the media, loved him. And by the way, later on, it was some scandal for some bullshit that he did. And then what did he do? He bombed Syria again. Why did he do that? Seemingly randomly, out of nowhere, he bombed Syria again because there was another scandal going on. And to try to get the praise from the media and distract from the scandal, you bombed Syria again, because the last time you bombed Syria, you got fawning praise. So what kind of a presidency do you expect when one of the few times the media starts giving the guy credit is when he starts furthering the empire and bombing random people? That's the problem with mainstream media, is that Trump, deep down he's a man baby, he's a child, so he wants this approval, but it all depends on which audience he's in front of. Whenever he's in front of a rally audience, he'll say whatever the rally people want to hear, which is why he's more populist in front of rally audiences, and he talks more about, hey, let's not outsource, let's keep the jobs here, let's do an infrastructure bill, let's stop, wasting our money overseas. That's what he says in front of rally audiences. But when he's in front of the establishment in his cabinet, the generals, what do you want? You want more war? Tremendous. Let's do more war. Unbelievable. And then, for the media, when he's sitting there watching the media, he wants to do stuff that pleases them. So that's why he kept bombing Syria. And now that's why you can expect Chuck Schumer and Donald Trump to work together on some more things. Now, this is why the media is important, because if they give him the credit for the right things, well then, he'll get the feedback that he should get and he might actually do some positive things. But this is also why the Democrats need to do the right thing in terms of bipartisan deals. Because, okay, so you get a little victory here. Wow, you got hurricane relief funding and we didn't default on our fucking debt. Wow, that's a low bar right there. But this is why you got to have a Democratic Party that's unapologetically for populist ideas, because then you can hold him accountable to his own fucking words on the campaign trail. So, for example, Trump argued, what was it? We covered the story. We gave you all of his quotes, at least on 7 different occasions. Trump argued for Medicare for All. So why not bring up his own quotes to him and say, Mr. President, I totally agree with you. Make him think it's still his idea, and he's the one that came up with it. Hey, Mr. President, we were going through some of your old stuff, and we found, you made a really great point, sir, when you said that Canada has a fantastic healthcare system and we should copy it. Scotland has a great healthcare system and we should copy it. We saw your comments when you were on David Letterman's show, or Jay Leno's show, and you said your friend got hurt, went and got help, and you didn't have to pay anything. We want to make a system like that in the United States of America. Mr. President, we can't wait to work with you on your own idea. If you had an opposition party that knew what the fuck they were doing, Trump railed against trade, so why not, again, phrase getting out of certain trade deals as a win and as him doing his thing? I mean, he killed TPP, but now he's slipping provisions of TPP into NAFTA. But if you had an opposition party that knew the right way to massage his ego and to get him to do our policies, well, then you would, it'd be wins across the board. Ro Khanna leads the way on this front because he can frame things in a way that make conservatives go, oh, you know what? That actually makes perfect sense. Like, for example, a living wage. You have to frame that as these multinational corporations, giant multinational corporations, keep getting welfare checks. Look at this. Why are we letting these corporations be welfare queens, and then the taxpayers have to pick up the slack when poor workers go to government programs to make ends meet? So why not force the corporations to stop being moochers? Bring up these ideas. Bring them up to Trump. Make him think it's his idea. Do your bipartisan bill, which he likes now because he's getting positive feedback from the media on it, and then you can actually get some shit accomplished. But unfortunately, all these pieces are not going to stay together. It's all going to fall apart because the media is not going to praise him for the right things. They're going to keep praising him for stuff like bombing Syria. And the Democrats are not going to effectively push for real populist ideas. They're not going to push for Medicare for all. They're not going to push for free college. They're not going to push for a living wage. So you're not going to get Trump to want to do a bipartisan deal on issues that are really important and that could be a victory for the American people. So this is why the media is so important. This is why having an effective opposition party is so important. And unfortunately, in both cases, it ain't good. So we're stuck with Donald Trump mostly getting praise for crazy shit like bombing countries that didn't attack us. Okay. The Providence Journal has a curious report out this week that I wanted to share with you. Tom Perez, former U.S. Labor Secretary, to teach at Brown. Tom Perez, chairman of the Democratic National Committee and former U.S. Labor Secretary under President Barack Obama, will join Brown University as a senior fellow at the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs, the university has announced. Perez is not leaving his position with the DNC, according to spokeswomen from Brown and the DNC. Perez, a 1983 Brown graduate, will work with students, faculty, and others, sharing insight and knowledge gained from the years he served as a member of President Obama's administration, as well as his time spent as a local organizer. Perez will lead a study group called Governance and Leadership in Challenging Times, and it will feature speakers including Dennis McDonough, Obama's former chief of staff, Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo, Michael Steele, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, and others. Quote, it's a great honor to welcome Brown graduate Tom Perez to Watson this fall, said Watson Institute Director Edward Steinfeld. He brings vast experience in local and national politics and will undoubtedly help all of us, students and faculty alike, apply theory and research to real-world challenges. What an extraordinary opportunity for all of us to learn from Tom and the numerous guests he'll bring to campus from across the political spectrum. The dude is the head of the DNC. The Democratic Party is in full-blown crisis and civil war. And he's getting a side gig as a teacher. It's not only that leading the DNC is a full-time job, it is the most full-time of full-time jobs. This shit ain't something you spend a couple hours on a day and then you move on. You got a lot of fucking work to do, dog. He's like, no, I'm going to go be a teacher. And then also, oh my God, the irony of what he's going to teach, governance and leadership in challenging times. What the fuck would you know about that? So you took over the DNC at a time of crisis. when it was proven that the DNC rigged the primary against the populist left candidate, Bernie Sanders, and for the establishment candidate, Hillary Clinton, you won in a very suspicious way because you didn't have the numbers behind you. You didn't have the people behind you. It was Keith Ellison, the representative of the Bernie wing, who had the people behind him. So you won in a questionable circumstance. And then since you've taken over, the fundraising for the DNC is abysmal. I mean, we covered it. It's a story. It's that bad. Because the big money donors are like, we just got burned on Hillary Clinton and we don't want to waste money. And then small money donors are like, why the fuck would I give money to the DNC when, you know, we wanted to invest financially, but also with our hopes and dreams into a candidate who's for Medicare for all and free college and a living wage, a guy like Bernie Sanders, and you stabbed us in the fucking back. So fundraising is lagging. The DNC is still broken. The Democratic Party's broken. And Tom Perez is like, I got time. I'm going to go do a teaching gig. Guys, they're not serious people. These aren't serious people. He's more about himself than he is about the ideas that the Democratic Party is supposed to represent. Those ideas, of course, being what I just outlined. Living wage, single payer, free college, end the wars, end the drug war, tax the rich, the list goes on and on. Infrastructure deal. So, what a loser he is. And they don't really care, man. They don't really care. The DNC, the Democrats, they would rather, people like Tom Perez would rather be employed with permanent losses from the Democrats. Democratic strategists would rather be employed while there are permanent losses with the Democrats than have a guy like Bernie Sanders win. If a guy like Bernie Sanders wins, what happens? He's going to clean house. He's going to say all these old, stale, neoliberal corporatists and your dead ideas that has driven this party off a cliff, you're gone. All the strategists who were wrong every step of the way. We lost 1,000 seats under Barack Obama, and we're supposed to still have these same strategists in place when they've proven they don't know how to do the one fucking job, which is their job. So Bernie would clean house, the populist left would clean house, but the Democratic Party would rather keep losing and stay employed, then win and change guard. So, Jesus, man, this is, it's bad. The situation is bad. And I think what's most frustrating is they ain't trying to fix it. They're not. The only people really trying to fix it, Justice Democrats, the group that I'm one of the co-founders of, and that you guys have done such a great job busting ass and doing hard work to try to push the proper policies for. We're the people trying to fix it because we're the ones who say, no, we're going to purge the party of the neoliberals and the Republican light folks and the corporatists and the status quo and the establishment. That's the only way the Democratic Party maintains viability, because it turns out when you give people the option between Republican and Republican light, they always go with the Republican. When you give people the option of populist left versus Republican, they're going to go populist left. So we're the only ones trying to actually reform the Democratic Party in a way that makes sense. And we have more allies outside the Democratic Party than within the Democratic Party because we see how broken the system is. We see how broken the party is. In a time like this, for the head of the DNC to go take a side gig teaching, what does that show? It shows you that in his mind, it's all good. It's all good. Hey, I, the old guard of the Democratic Party that agrees more with Hillary Clinton than Bernie Sanders, I am still in control, you know? So where's the problem here? Where's the problem? I'm still in control. Hillary's dropping hints left and right that she's going to try to run again in 2020. So as long as we're still in power, fuck it. Everything else is fine. No, it's not fine because people are being absolutely obliterated and destroyed by the horrific decisions of Donald Trump and the Republicans. And the answer isn't to half agree with them and do somewhat shitty policies like you guys want to do. The answer is to oppose them and fight for the right ideas. Okay. Okay, let's take our first break. When we come back, I will hopefully have that final story, which I couldn't fucking find. And then I got a whole bunch of stuff to get to. We got Bernie Sanders in the show. We got a survey on people and how much they enjoy their jobs. What? And then an interesting piece about a new case the ACLU is involved in and how Donald Trump would love to legalize outright discrimination. All right, stay right there. We'll talk about all that and more.
you with the left. You will fake so one bone gap you with the
son of a bitch.
Okay. We're back, people. We're back, people. So last night there was an 8.2 level earthquake that hit Mexico. And as a result of that, at least 15 people are dead. And there was a tsunami warning. I don't think a tsunami actually hit, but there was a tsunami warning directly after. Guys, 8.2 is like the Wu-Tang Clan. It ain't nothing to fuck with. There were videos coming out of there about people recording. Everything is fucking shaking. I mean, obviously, it's an earthquake, but... man, there's a lot of shit going on right now. And it's kind of scary. I mean, we went over it the other day, but now you just add this to the list. You have wildfires in Oregon and California. You have flooding in Houston. You have three hurricanes at once, including Irma, which is about to barrel into Florida. Hurricane Jose has now been upgraded. Katia, I don't know if that's still a Category 1 hurricane or what's happening with that, but jeez, it feels fucked up. And then also, I saw a tweet, I think it was from Popular Science, that said scientists are trying to figure out a way to have the supervolcano that's in Yellowstone not explode. Wait, what? Like, yeah, but we're trying to figure out a way so the supervolcano doesn't erupt. Whoa. So that's something you're concerned about right now? Like, oh, it looks like it's going to explode. Oh, stop, everything. What's happening? I'm so scared. Mother Nature is a son of a bitch, man. Every time natural disasters happen, I'm reminded of how much of a gargantuan bitch I am. Because I don't know about you guys, but it doesn't matter what natural disaster it is. If I were to get hit with a natural disaster, I'd just say, oh, I'm moving from here. That's it. There's no, like, are you kidding me? Like, what am I going to do? I'm going to fucking stay here where I just got hit with a goddamn natural disaster? So, you know, if it was L.A. or if it was, you know, Oregon, wherever, I'd say, oh, no, we got... So earthquakes happen here, and then there's also wildfires. I'm out. If I was ever actually in an earthquake, I wouldn't know. I'd probably immediately get PTSD, and you need to drug me up with every pharmaceutical under the sun in order for me to continue to go on. If I was in Tornado Alley and my shit got hit by a tornado, I move out of there so fast, it's fucking crazy. No, I can't fuck around with that. I can't fuck around with tornadoes. You kidding me? Hurricanes? I don't know. I was talking about this yesterday. I don't get why. Why would anybody buy a house on the water? Especially in South Florida. You know you're on borrowed time, bitch. It's not a question. It's like, oh, yeah, well, we bought this, piece of property. It's lovely. Yeah, but you're TikTok. In under 20 years, you're going to get walloped by a hurricane and then massive flooding with a storm surge of at least 10 feet. Why would you buy that property? You know it's going to get wiped out at some point. Again, it's not a question. Here's my rule. I just made this rule up right now. You cannot buy a house that's less than 20 feet over sea level. If your house is under 20 feet above sea level, move, bitch, get out of the way. Because that, you're on borrowed time. It's not a question. You're on borrowed time. So I don't know, if you're in New Orleans, get out. If you're in South Florida, get out. And forget it. You know, I'm talking all this shit, but then again, I live in New York and we got walloped by Sandy. Thankfully, the worst that happened to me was I lost power for over a week. But that was even, I think it was a Category 3 when it hit us. And then where we were feeling the effects, it was just like a strong tropical storm. And even that, I was like, So anyway, I learned that Syracuse, New York is apparently the place in the U.S. that's the safest from all natural disasters. So Syracuse, I'll see you soon. Because the next time I get hit with some shit, I don't care what it is. It could be a hurricane. We rarely get tornadoes around here, but tornado, earthquake. Is earthquakes in southern New York a thing? I don't know. But whatever the fuck it is, we get hit with something, I'm out. And I'll see you. Syracuse, I will see you. But the other thing I was thinking about this earthquake in Mexico is that an indicator that the San Andreas fault is about to pop? Because I've seen pieces about Oh, yeah, we're overdue for, like, a really huge one to hit the San Andreas in California. Oh, man. When that happens, because it's not if, it's when that happens, the devastation that it will leave in its wake will be... can't even wrap your mind around it. It's just a dreadful day. But we know it's coming. I don't know why we always want to just fucking roll the dice. Like, yeah, we'll build New Orleans under sea level. Yeah, fuck it. Let's build some shit here. What the fuck? That's a San Andreas fault. Yeah, put, you know, millions of people right near it. What? Why? But then again, you know, I'm the one who's the bitch, and I'd hide in a fucking steel-reinforced bunker forever if I could, but what are you going to do? Okay. Now let's go to Hillary Clinton's book, and Bernie responds. Bernie Sanders was confronted with some quotes about him from Hillary Clinton's new book. He's on Chris Hayes' show on MSNBC. So his response ought to be good.
I've read your responses to this portion of Hillary Clinton's book. This is going to happen. You're going to get asked about this.
I'm shocked that you're interested in
this. Well, no, but here is a portion that I thought got to something that's sort of interestingly deep and substantive and continues in the party today. And this is about the sort of, let's call it the frontier of the possible. The question of what a presidential candidate is selling their voters, mm-hmm. and what goals they're setting in this sort of trade-off between reality, right? So she says, no matter how bold and progressive my policy proposals were, Bernie was something even bigger, loftier, and leftier, regardless of whether it was realistic or not. And that Jake Sullivan has this analogy to there's something about Mary, where a deranged hitchhiker says he's coming with a brilliant plan. Instead of famous 8-minute abs exercise routine, he's going to market 7-minute abs. It's the same, just quicker.
I.e., Bernie Sanders just stole all of Hillary Clinton's ideas. Does anybody really believe that? The truth is, and the real story is, that the ideas that we brought forth during that campaign, which was so crazy and so radical, have increasingly become mainstream. I talked about a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Right.
Hillary did not. You know what? We got 31 co-sponsors on legislation for $15 an hour minimum wage. Talked about $1 trillion infrastructure. We talked about making healthcare a right of all people through Medicare for All. Medicare for All is becoming mainstream within the Democratic Party. So many college, making public colleges and universities tuition free. Talk to the governor of the state of New York. He's pretty proud of his accomplishment. So what I'm saying here, Chris, is many of the ideas that we talked about, that Secretary Clinton and others said, oh, those are too far out. They are the ideas that are sweeping America, that most Americans are.
Yep, there you go again. I mean, this happened the other day. His response when he was asked by other reporters, hey, Hillary seemingly blamed you for her loss here. What do you have to say to that? He's like, look, I'm moving forward. I'm not looking backwards. And what we're focused on is getting a $15 an hour minimum wage. We're focused on Medicare for All. We're focused on defeating Trump and his attempt to rescind DACA. So even given the opportunity, hey, you were personally attacked. Do you want to attack back? He can't do it. He's like, no, here, I'll give you policies. Because that's what a good person does, and that's what somebody who really cares about the issues does. Whereas Hillary, she can't help herself but point finger at everybody else and talk about it in personal terms. And also just say things that are flatly untrue. So, for example, she makes these two arguments at the same fucking time, and it's amazing to me that she hasn't been able to stop herself or pick one. So half the time she'll say what she just said right there. Well, look, Bernie Sanders, I mean, so I come along and I say, hey, I got 8-minute abs for you. And then he comes along and says, really? I got 7-minute abs for you. The same, just a little bit quicker. So in other words, Hillary's saying, oh, man, you know, I'm putting out all these good ideas. And then he comes along and says, oh, yeah, I'll do that plus one. But and I, Hillary Clinton, I mean, so what? I agree 90%, 95% with Bernie Sanders. But that last 5% or 10%, that makes all the difference. And so she even said it in her book, didn't matter how bold and progressive and all this stuff I think I was, he always just outdid me. But then she'll make a different argument at the same time where she says his ideas are pie in the sky, you know, unicorn, fairy dust, crazy pipe dream, far-left ideas. But wait, which is it, Hillary? You don't get to say, crazy, naive, pie in the sky, far-left pipe dreams like Medicare for all. And by the way, I agree with 95% of what he says. So then you agree 95% with the fucking pipe dream and the pie in the sky? And no, because she tries to have it both ways. One argument is, what? I agree with him. I don't know what you guys are talking about. This, we're like the same person, me and Bernie. And oh yeah, Bernie's crazy with his naive, fucking crazy out there policies. Which is it? Which is it? And the point is, she didn't pick one of those arguments. She makes both of them at the same time because she has no real argument against Bernie Sanders. So it's just throw mud against the wall and hope something sticks. So, hey, which one do you guys like better? Do you like it when I attack him for being, you know, super naive and pushing things that I think we'll never get? Or do you like it when I say I agree with him so he needs to get off my ass and stop attacking me? I can't, you know, the other thing that annoyed the shit out of me? How she's like, she admits in her book, like, you know, some, hey, I spoke to my own advisor, said, don't really attack Bernie because that's not going to help you. It's going to hurt you. Obama said, look, just grit your teeth and bear it. Don't attack him because that's not going to help you. And she says, oh, I restrained myself. First of all, no, you didn't. You attacked him ruthlessly and in ways that were super hacky. But second of all, she's admitting in her book, like, oh, it's all about strategy. You know, it's all about how should I frame this thing that I am trying to say? What is the best way to spin this to try to get my argument across? So in other words, in her book, she's not saying, hey, where's the substantive disagreements me and Bernie have, and I'm going to say, here's why my policy is better than his policy. It's not about that. To her, it's never about policy. It's about personal politics, and it's about how can I outflank him and get more people to like me. She said, I felt like I was in a straitjacket because I was restrained from attacking him. Well, if you really believe in what the fuck you're saying, why would you take anybody's advice? Why wouldn't you say, no, Bernie, you're wrong, and here's why you're wrong? You can't do that because you have no idea if you're right about the shit you're saying. Because you're not really married to policies. You're vapid. You're vacuous. You're empty. Your own people in your own fucking campaign said, I can't figure out why she's running. It seems to me like she just thinks, I'm next in line, so let's be serious and put me in here. So you felt entitled to it. And then along came a guy who actually ran on ideas, and you were fucking stunned when he got 122 states, won 47% of the vote, and that's when the entire establishment media biased against him, and the entire DNC trying to rig the process from day one. She's so sad, Mitch. Go away, go away. Do you not get it? You're the Mitt Romney of the left. You're the establishment status quo insider who nobody loves but the establishment likes. And because you're in establishment circles all the time, you get the impression that you're beloved around the country. But you're not. Many of the people who voted for you gritted their teeth and said, I think I'm voting for the lesser of two evils against Donald Trump. So she has a horrendous perception of herself. In fact, I'm going to get to another story on that in a minute, but she can't help but attack him and contradict herself in the process, and Bernie still takes the high road and says, I'm focused on the policies. I'm not getting into the weeds with that. Okay, now, here, the next Hillary Clinton one. I'm tired of talking about Hillary Clinton, but I keep seeing articles about her because of her new book, and I can't help myself. I have to respond. So in her book, What Happened?, she went after Bernie Sanders and blamed him for her loss. But she also wrote some stuff on her personal life and how the public perceives her. And there's a lot to say about this. So this is from CNN. I heard it again on the 2016 campaign. It's just a marriage on paper now, she writes, adding, he is reading this over my shoulder in our kitchen with our dogs underfoot, and in a minute he will reorganize our bookshelves for the millionth time. But I don't mind because he really loves to organize those bookshelves. Of course, she's talking about Bill there. In addition to bemoaning the fascination with her relationship, she lambasts media coverage for her emails, singling out the New York Times as a repeat and high-profile offender. And she wonders aloud why, after terms as First Lady, U.S. Senator, Secretary of State, and two-time presidential candidate, the public still just doesn't seem to like her. Quote, what makes me such a lightning rod of fury, or lightning rod for fury? I'm really asking. I'm at a loss, she asks her readers before concluding, I think it's partly because I'm a woman. Why don't you guys like me? I don't understand. It's got to be because you're sexist. Okay, pause. You're doing it right now. You're doing it right now, the thing why we don't like you. Because it's a perpetual victimhood. You just said I was the first lady, I was a U.S. Senator, I was Secretary of State, and aren't I such a victim? I'm such a victim. Feel bad for... Why would we fucking feel bad for you? You just outlined how elite you are and how establishment you are and how much privilege you've had, and then you cry sexism. Now, furthermore, this is infuriating to no end because she's not even trying to really find the answer. She's comfortable strawmanning everybody who disagrees with her and dismissing them and saying, hey, the people who disagree, they don't count. You know, my detractors do not count because something. They're Russian trolls, they're racist, they're sexist, they're deplorables, so put them all aside. The only ones that count are the ones who support me. She's comfortable doing that because the way she phrases this, what makes me such a lightning rod for fury? I'm really asking. I'm at a loss. But everybody answers that question for you, and you just don't like the answer, so you ignore it. How many times have people brought up to you on the left, Hillary, it's because you take a tremendous amount of money from Wall Street and big banks and big pharma and private health insurance companies. You were for single payer, then you flipped when you started taking money from giant multinational corporations. You were in favor of having fair bankruptcy laws until you took money from multinational corporations. Then you flipped and you were in favor of a bill that biased the bankruptcy laws in favor of the corporations. When people look at your record, you supported NAFTA, which is outsourcing jobs. You supported the deregulation of Wall Street. People on the left don't like you for policy reasons and for corruption. It's not because there's some irrational hatred towards you on the left. The people who supported Bernie Sanders, who calls himself a feminist, what, they're going to support a feminist politician who's the furthest left politician in the goddamn country, definitely in the Senate, they're going to support that person, but also they're sexist. I think it's because I'm a woman that that's why they don't like me. No, why don't you listen to everybody when they say it? You voted for the Iraq War. You voted for the Patriot Act. It's all about the decisions you make. And you don't believe me? Well, then, you know, why is it that so many people on the left who don't like you ended up voting for Jill Stein or would support an Elizabeth Warren candidacy or a Tulsi Gabbard candidacy? So it's the fact that you're being obtuse on purpose. You don't want the answer. When people give you the answer as to why you're such a lightning rod, you dismiss them. So don't ask the question if you don't want the fucking answer. We give you the answer. And then you say, but it doesn't count for reasons and stuff. And by the way, that's not to say there aren't some people who irrationally dislike her, because there are plenty who irrationally dislike her, in the sense that they don't know or care about any of the policy issues. They couldn't tell you how she voted one way or the other way on anything. They stick to preposterous things like, I don't know, Benghazi, she wanted our ambassador to die or something. There are people who genuinely believe that, and they're a bunch of fucking idiots. There are people who fall for every fucking fake scandal about her. She murdered some guy or something. Okay, give me a break, give me a break, give me a break. There are people who despise her for silly reasons. That exists. But almost all of the hatred for her coming from the left is based on policy ideas and based on her corruption. So don't ask the question if you don't want the answer. It's clear you don't want the answer because it's been given to you a million times and you scoff and you laugh it off. Okay. Okay. Let me do one more here before we take our final break. You guys remember Rodrigo Duterte? He's the lunatic president of the Philippines who is slaughtering drug users in the streets in what's pretty clearly a genocide. I mean, it sounds like, oh, you're overstating it. No, I mean, don't take my word for it. Take his word for it. He said repeatedly, no, I want to slaughter drug users in the streets. If you're involved in the drug trade, I want to kill you. If you're selling, if you're using, I'll kill you. Not only that, I'd have your own parents kill you, but I think they're, you know, too cowardly to do it, so I'll have the police do it, and don't worry about, you know, being prosecuted or something. I'm on your side, so you can go ahead and kill drug users all day long. So vigilante justice, kill people for, you know, putting in their body what they want to put in their body. That's what this guy's doing. Thousands of people have been killed. Thousands, over 10,000 people have been killed in this crackdown. So that's Rodrigo Duterte. Now, we learned a deep, dark secret a while ago. He's addicted to fentanyl. What? Fentanyl is the strongest opioid out there. I mean, makes morphine look like fucking child's play. So, but when he was called out of it, well, no. I was prescribed it. And yeah, so it's cool. So he's slaughtering drug users as he's addicted to the strongest fucking drug under the sun. Insane deep hypocrisy is mind-boggling. I mean, how can you do that? By your own logic, you should kill yourself. Okay, but that's not the end of the hypocrisy here. So this is what we learn now. Rodrigo Duterte's son is accused of involvement with massive drug deal. The son of Philippine strongman Rodrigo Duterte has denied any involvement with a seized Chinese shipment of 1,300 pounds of crystal meth worth roughly $125 million. Goddamn. Paulo Duterte has been accused by opponents of helping to facilitate the entry of the massive shipment into the port of Manila along with his brother-in-law, Manassas Carpio, according to Bloomberg Politics. A broker who handled the shipment claimed the smugglers had links with the two men. Philippine authorities filed charges against the broker, Mark Taguba, in July. At a hearing at the House of Representatives on August 7th, he said that he paid 1 million pesos a week to a group in Davao in the south of the country where Paulo Duterte is a vice mayor. He added that while he never met with Duterte or Carpio directly, their names were often mentioned and protection money was accepted on their behalf. Both men strongly deny the claims. Carpio, who is married to the president's daughter, Sarah, said that he and his brother-in-law have been publicly crucified based on rumors and gossip. Both gentlemen are willing and ready to face malicious allegations intended to impugn on their character and credibility, a spokesman for Rodrigo Duterte said. The president has said on numerous occasions that he would not interfere. Senator Antonio Trillanes, who has been a staunch critic of the president's regime, said that his son, Paulo Duterte, had a dragon-like tattoo with secret digits on his back, which proved his involvement with drug smuggling. Paulo Duterte admitted that he had the tattoo, but when asked whether he'd allow a photo of it to be sent to the DEA for analysis, he said no way. Damn. Here's why he said no way. Because that motherfucker's guilty. He's smuggling drugs, okay? Now, I, of course, don't think there should be super harsh punishment for that. But Rodrigo Duterte is literally slaughtering people involved in the drug trade. He's committing a genocide against them. And he's addicted to fentanyl, and his son is one of the mass distributors. What do you even say about it? It's like life is a fucking simulation. If Rodrigo Duterte was consistent in his views. Now, I'd rather him not be, for the sake of everybody. But if he were consistent, he would kill his son and then put a bullet in his own head. Rodrigo, what's up, dog? What you gonna do? He's not gonna do it, of course, but it goes to show you the hypocrisy and goes to show you how preposterous his belief system is. I mean, he's slaughtering other people for doing what he's doing and his son's doing. He's killing them in the street. And by the way, Trump called this guy and said, tremendous, I love the way you're handling the drug situation. What? Yep, that's right. So, if it feels like the wheels are off and we're going 1,000 miles an hour into a cement wall, it's because we are. Because this is what's happening around the world. Okay. Break time, break time. When we come back, the ACLU has a really interesting case involving President Trump and what he thinks is a right to discriminate, and what percentage of people think they're actually productive at their job during normal hours. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay right there.
Go left, cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self. In the kitchen. your water with you with the left.
Son of a bitch.
All right, baby. We back.
I feel like I'm a woman being left.
And we got quite a few to get through. Reminder, there's no show all next week. What? Yes. First time in a while that there's a week off. It's going to feel weird, but that's what's happening. So don't miss me too much. I will miss y'all. Who knows? Maybe I'll do some vlog-style videos and throw them up there on YouTube. Some stuff will continue to upload, of course. But yeah, no show next week. Let's do our best to squeeze in as many as we can here before that happens. Okay. James Essex of the ACLU has a really interesting piece about a new case that the ACLU is involved in. President Trump and Attorney General Sessions want to enshrine a business's right to discriminate into the Constitution. Wow, okay. Can businesses put up a sign that says, "We don't sell to gays"? President Trump says yes. Today, Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions told the Supreme Court in an amicus brief that businesses have a constitutional right to discriminate against lesbian, gay, and bisexual people. That means that business owners could put a sign in the window saying, "We don't serve gays," even if a state or Congress says anti-gay discrimination is unlawful. While the Justice Department says this wouldn't necessarily allow businesses to turn people away because of their race, if the Constitution protects such a right to discriminate against gay people, it would also authorize businesses to discriminate based on national origin, sex, religion, disability, gender identity, or any other basis. That means businesses could put up other signs as well. "We don't sell to women, no Muslims, no transgender people," all in open defiance of the nation's civil rights laws. How did we get here? The case before the Supreme Court has deceptively simple facts. Dave Mullins and Charlie Craig were planning their wedding reception in Colorado. Along with Charlie's mom, Dave and Charlie went to the Masterpiece Cake Shop Bakery near Denver to order a cake in July 2012. The bakery turned them away, saying it doesn't make wedding cakes for gay couples because that would violate its religious beliefs and artistic freedom. Under longstanding Colorado law, businesses that are open to the public can't turn customers away because they are lesbian, gay, or bisexual. That's just what happened here. So Charlie and Dave sued. The Colorado courts agreed that it was discrimination and ruled that free speech and religious protections don't give anyone a right to discriminate. It's easy to dismiss the case as trivial. Dave and Charlie could, and did, get a cake from another bakery, and few people would really want a cake from a bakery that doesn't actually want to bake it. But consider what a ruling for the bakery could mean here. Constitutional protection for discrimination based on freedom of religion or expression. That's breathtaking in its scope and consequences. It would mean that a florist could refuse to sell flowers for the funeral of an interfaith couple. A dance studio could turn away the children of an interracial couple. An architect could put up a sign saying "no Jews." A doctor could turn away transgender people altogether. And each and every law that makes discrimination illegal would be overridden by the constitutional right to discriminate. In fact, the consequences go far beyond non-discrimination laws. If any business has a constitutional right to express its views or its religion by refusing to comply with a non-discrimination law, it could defy other government rules as well. Businesses could refuse to follow food safety rules because they want to express themselves through their refusal. Or a company could flout consumer protection regulations because they are inconsistent with its religious beliefs. So, think about that. In other words, what they're saying is this case isn't just about the thing that it is technically about, which is, hey, can LGBTQ people say, "You can't reject me solely on the basis of my sexual identity"? That's what the case is about on paper. But the implications of the case go much deeper than that, because this is really about, do businesses have a right to discriminate? And if you allow businesses to discriminate against gays, well, then you also, of course, would have to allow businesses to discriminate based on other characteristics. So you could discriminate based on ethnicity, you can discriminate based on religion, you can discriminate based on race, and the list goes on and on. And the examples they give are really scary examples, because of course that could happen. And the question really is, what kind of a society do you want to live in? And what point does freedom go up to, and at what point are you demanding the freedom to take away other people's freedom? So libertarians actually argue, no, seriously, the businesses should be able to do that. Because, you know, hey, it's their right to serve or not serve whoever the fuck they want to serve. That's what the libertarians would argue. But I think that's wrong because it shouldn't be legal to discriminate based on arbitrary characteristics. So in other words, if somebody comes into your store and they start fucking shit up, they knocked over a shelf on purpose, they start screaming at people, and you want to deny that person service, by all means, nobody in their right mind is going to say, you're not allowed to do that because you're discriminating. No, in that sense, discrimination is totally fine. You're not discriminating based on arbitrary characteristics. You're discriminating based on actions. Hey, this person, this individual, is creating a problem, so I'm refusing service. Totally legal, totally okay. But if you're, you know, kicking somebody out based on something like their sexual identity, saying I'm not going to serve you because you're gay, well then, yeah, you've opened the door for people to say I'm not serving you because of fill in the blank with whatever bigoted beliefs they have. I mean, to give a preposterous hypothetical example, it would legally be allowed for people to say, oh, you have blue eyes? I don't serve blue-eyed people. Get the fuck out of here. I don't serve them. Get out. You're an atheist? I don't serve atheists. I don't serve atheists. I don't serve Jews. I don't serve Muslims. You know, I don't... are you mixed race? Are your parents an interracial couple? I don't serve your kind around here. Get out. Now, again, if the business wants to discriminate based on the actions of an individual and what they've done, yes, you could do that. If you want to discriminate based on arbitrary characteristics, you know, skin color, what religion you were born into, sexual identity, no, that shouldn't be legal. And to me, that seems like, you know, business regulation 101. That if you don't, if you're not in favor of those kinds of regulations, then it's not just like, oh, I only want to carve out an exception for this one area where, yeah, you should be able to reject gay people if you don't like gay people. Once you open that door, the door's open. So now you have no legal standing to tell the person who wants to say no blacks allowed, you can't say no blacks allowed. Basically, this is a question of, does the Civil Rights Act count or not? If you side with the ACLU on this, what you're saying is, I believe the Civil Rights Act was good legislation, and it should count, and it's totally constitutional. If you side against the ACLU, you're saying, no, I don't believe in the Civil Rights Act. I don't believe in it. I don't believe in the core of it. I don't believe in the heart of it. I don't believe that businesses should be forced to serve people who have arbitrary characteristics that they disagree with. That is a, you know, that then you're talking about like an anarcho-capitalist society, you know, and they even give the example of you could theoretically have a business run by fundamentalists of one stripe or another who say, oh, no, we don't do the safety regulation thing. Well, why? Well, look, it violates my religion and my sincerely held beliefs. So once you give the businesses the freedom to violate anti-discrimination laws, you've given them the freedom to violate food safety laws or safety regulations, child labor laws. Hey, no, who are you to tell me? This business is free to do what it wants. So we have the freedom to employ child labor. If the kid says yes, and if we're okay with it, and both, hey, that happens, so... the state has no standing to come in here and say, no, you can't do that. You don't have the freedom to do that. So, yeah, you can't have an anarcho-capitalist system where there's no rules and regulations. And, of course, one of those rules should be you're not allowed to discriminate based on arbitrary characteristics. Okay. There's a new Flex Jobs survey out about the workplace, and in it there are some wild results that I wanted to share with you. Listen to this. 66% of people believe that they would be more productive if they worked remotely instead of at a traditional office. 66% of you. That's most people saying, yeah, if I worked from home or if I worked on my own, I'm better off than if I'm at an office. And here are the reasons why. 76% said there'd be fewer interruptions and fewer distractions from colleagues. 70% said it would reduce the stress of commuting, which they really want to do. And 69% said, I would avoid office politics, which is like the worst thing ever. So most people are like, I can't deal with the bullshit of being in a traditional workplace. It would be so great if I was just on my own and got to do my own thing, which is fascinating. I don't know if that would have been the case, you know, in the past. I feel like the trend towards individualism and almost being a loner is more of a modern thing. I could be wrong about that, but I feel like it's more of a modern thing, maybe tied to the internet age, where you have everything in the world available at your fingertips anyway, so why would you need to be out and see other people face-to-face and deal with their bullshit when you could just be on your own and still connect with the world but through a fucking screen? But that's not the craziest part. Listen to the craziest fact in this poll. Only 7% of workers feel productive during regular work hours. What? 7%. So, yeah, no, I'm totally productive during regular work hours. Wow, man. That's so low. And there's multiple reasons why that is. I mean, think about the fact that most work hours are what? You know, fucking 9 to 5 or 8 to 4, maybe 7 to 3 with some people. Yeah, that's like... people don't want to fucking wake up that early, dog. Like, you make them wake up super early. You make them go to work super early. It's not like they're, you know, hey, they got a great night's sleep when they were forced to wake up at fucking 6 o'clock in the morning. No. People, of course, want to sleep in later than that. And then, of course, the office politics bullshit, the surrounded by the colleagues and all the time and stuff, and being in a traditional work environment. It's not comfortable. It's not conducive to creativity. So only 7% of people say, hey, yeah, this is I'm super productive during work hours. The reason why I'm giving you this information is because don't assume that just because we do things a certain way now that it's just going to stay like that, because that's not necessarily true. We could do something a certain way now, and then it could also be the case that it'll die off eventually. The way we do wake up at this time, go to work, come home, like, you go to an office and stuff, it could all be a transitional phase. I mean, it could be effectively like the Morse code. You know how Morse code, oh, that's how we communicate, Morse code, and then now nobody uses fucking Morse code. We graduated past that. The way that we do our economic system now could be the same thing. And then, of course, you have increased automation, which has tremendous downsides but also tremendous upsides. And I mean, we have the potential to move towards an economy where people can have a lot more leisure time and still do well, but it's all about how we make the decisions from here on out. If we still have massive political corruption and we still have tremendous income inequality, then of course people are going to get screwed in the transition to a more automated system. But if you have some sort of way of, yes, redistributing wealth to make it so that people can survive, as we move towards automation and do well and have a middle-class life, as we move towards automation, well, then there's no telling how far human beings can go and how productive we can be and how far technology will take us. But the way we're doing it right now is antiquated, it's old, it's dumb, and only 7% of people say, yeah, this is great, I'm so productive when I drag my ass to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, sit there asleep for two and a half hours, barely having a functioning mind, and then pretend to do work for a few more hours and do maybe 20 minutes of actual work. That's how everybody feels, and these numbers prove it. Okay. All right, now I got another one on gay marriage. And this one, yeah, I'm going to be an asshole in this segment, but whatever. An anti-gay marriage activist has decided to really stick it to the man, really stick it to big gay, pun intended. So this is from the Huffington Post. A notorious opponent of same-sex marriage is suing the state of Alabama to recognize his union with a 2011 MacBook. Chris Sevier claims that he married his computer in New Mexico a while back. He filed a federal lawsuit in the Northern District of Alabama on August 31st, demanding that the state either recognize that alleged marriage to what he calls an object with female-like features or issue him a new license to wed the computer, according to AL.com. Although he describes his sexual orientation as machinist in the suit, Sevier's goal here is not true bliss with his laptop. What the suit is ultimately seeking is the overturn of the Supreme Court's decision to legalize same-sex marriage nationwide, and Sevier has tried this strategy before. So he also did this shit in Utah. Imagine being such a loser that you have that much time on your hands to sue to make a stupid point over some shit like this and doing it in multiple states. And in his mind, it's clear. He's like, I totally got him. There's no way they'll get out of this one. Checkmate, stupid libs. I want to marry a computer. Aren't gays terrible? I just got an eyelash in my eye. This is terrible. Oh, no, it hurts. Motherfucker. Ugh. I think it's time to take a contact out for a few days. What do you guys think? Ugh. I'll do that when I get off air. Holy shit. Okay. Anyway, where was I? He really thought, I got him. Now they're all going to have to admit, hey, oh, the logic of gay marriage has been destroyed. I love the one of the judges' responses to this. He goes, the laptop's not, he's like 17 years old or whatever, 15, 16, 17, whatever the legal line is. The laptop's not old enough. So no, you can't marry it. That's a good fucking response. But furthermore, I mean, look, you're trivializing the shit out of gay marriage. Like, there are two people who love each other, and you're saying just because they're the same gender, I hereby declare it's null and void, and they shouldn't get any of the same tax benefits and shouldn't be treated equally under the law. That's fucked up, man. And then also, look, it's an inanimate object. You can argue since it's an inanimate object, there's no consent. So, no, you can't marry the laptop because the laptop, by definition, can't consent to you. You know, there's another argument. But look, I got to keep it real with you guys. I wouldn't even give a fuck if he did marry it. Now, I know I just said that it would cheapen, you know, oh, it cheapens marriage. Marriage is it's a societal creation, you know. It's a legal thing we created where we say, oh, okay, you guys are together. This incentivizes people to have a family, and you get tax breaks and you get benefits if you do it, and people love each other, they want to do it, of course, that's fantastic, by all means, but as if I would, like, what, I'm going to lose sleep if some jackass wants to marry an inanimate object? No, I'm going to say, you're an idiot, but by all means, I don't give a fuck. So I love how, like, he's so obsessed with this issue. Why, I ask you, do you think he's obsessed with this issue? Oh, I don't know. Why don't we take a look at a picture of him? Oh, come on. Oh, come on, man. Who is this guy kidding? You know, remember the show I Dream of Jeannie? This guy is going to star in a new show, I Dream of Cox. I know sometimes people get mad at me when I make this point, but I didn't create the facts as they are. I'm just pointing out what it is. Whenever people are really vehemently anti-gay, to the point where they might, I don't know, file two lawsuits in two separate states trying to stop gay marriage by saying, I want to marry my laptop. If you're that anti-gay, chances are what you're doing is externalizing an internal struggle. You know how these kinds of characters always say, being gay is a choice, so you got to choose not to do it because that's the moral thing, is to not do it. Why would they say being gay is a choice? Because in their mind, it is a choice for them. They say, look, if you really gave me the option and you remove the consequences, would I go blow every guy on the block? Hell yeah, I would. Who wouldn't? That's how they think. And they think you feel the same thing. They think everybody feels the same thing. Oh, see, I'm fighting the demons that make me want to blow dudes. So I'm being moral here and just. Usually, they come from fundamentalist families that teach them being gay is wrong. And they believe that. And so, therefore, they fight off the feelings, the natural attraction that they have towards men. And then that manifests by them making fucking ridiculous lawsuits where they say, we're going to destroy the logic of gay marriage because I'm going to marry my laptop. Yeah. Dude, you lost the battle. Over 60% of the American people are in favor of legalizing gay marriage, as it should be, as it fucking should be. And they ain't going back, man. If anything, that number is just going to get stronger and stronger to the point where it's going to be such a duh that we're going to look back at it like we look back at segregation. Like, oh, really? We did that? That was so fucking immensely stupid. Same thing's going to happen. Oh, really? There was a time when gay people couldn't get married? That's like the dumbest thing ever. But guys like this, they can't get over it. Can't get over it because he's struggling with some stuff himself. Look, in all seriousness, all jokes aside, what I would tell this guy, if he's happening to listen, is, dude, there's nothing wrong with it, and your fundamentalist upbringing where your parents taught you it was wrong, they are wrong. It is not wrong to have same-sex attractions. It's totally fine. It happens within a certain percentage of the population with human beings and with animals across the animal kingdom. So it is natural because it occurs in nature. So if you're one of the people who's attracted to people of the same sex, whatever, it's totally fine. You shouldn't be discriminated against. It shouldn't be something that is viewed through a moral lens or an ethical lens. There's no attachment to that whatsoever. It's your freedom. It's your right. You're not hurting anybody. And you can accept yourself and live a normal life. But, you know, this baggage is so deep with this guy. If he's doing lawsuits over it, that who knows if he'll ever fully convert to realizing there's nothing wrong with it. He'll probably just stay deep in that closet and lash out and try to take away other people's rights. Because in his mind, he says, well, if I can't suck the dicks, nobody can. How about that? Final story of the day. Final story of the week. And, like I said, final reminder, tomorrow too, what does that mean? For next week too, no show. Stuff will continue to upload on YouTube, but no new shows next week. First time in a long time, but no new shows. And then, of course, I'll be back the week after. All right, let's finish up with something funny here. The ladies on The View spoke about porn. Oh, boy, this ought to be funny. I feel obligated to make you suffer through this like I did.
Really, it's a rite of passage in the internet age that all parents will have to deal with. Your kids are going to watch online porn. Wired magazine says it can happen as early as 11, so what do you do? God.
It's scary. I said to Sonny, I don't have kids, but I said to Sonny, like, to have children right now is so scary, especially if you have a son. And I always worry that because it's so available out there right now that a young boy could get their perception of what intimacy should look like from there. And it's not, right, and it's not like people say, oh, there were Playboy magazines. This is different. You can go and look at rape porn. I mean, this gets scary.
And I just learned this during our Hot Topics meeting. I did not know that there was a website for free pornography.
Well,
don't say the name. And I mean, I just had no idea. I mean, I've certainly spoken to, I have so many parental controls on our family computer that I don't think they can access the porn because they can't even do their science homework. True sorry. But they have their phones, you know, at school.
And they go to people's houses.
And they go to people's homes.
The other thing that I thought was interesting in how we're framing this, you know, you think this is just the boys. It's not.
No.
Girls are getting their idea
right.
of how intimacy works and how sex is supposed to work as well. And it's not new. Because, you know, if you follow pornography, you see how pornography affects the mainstream. You know, women used to have, used to be a sign of greatness when you had body hair, you know. And it was like you were grown up. And then suddenly it went to, oh, you can just have this much. And then the mainstream said, yeah, we'll just do the what they call the landing strip. And then we went to a place where there is nothing.
Yeah.
And there was an uptick, you know, where women had no hair on their body. And there was an uptick in
pedophilia
with
what
young girls, because that's what young girls look like.
Wrong.
So this has been going on for a while.
Okay. I don't know what, I mean, I know I've said to my son, you know, I know that you may watch this, but this is not what real sex and intimacy looks like. And I've spoken to him about it, but what do you really say to
kids
about?
Well, he's got to beat the conversation, first of all, because by the time they're asking questions, they've been talking to their friends, and they, you know,
yeah.
by the time they feel comfortable
enough. Or looking
enough,
at this website.
Or the website.
It seems to me that there's sex going on every channel right now. That you don't
but
have
it's
to,
not the theme. It's what Jed said. These videos,
well,
I heard
you
from a friend.
Oh, man. I hope that's not, like, you know, indicative of what most women in their age group think, because that was scary to watch. Okay, so they start off with, like, oh, online porn. Oh, yeah, online porn. Scary, really is. Yeah, oh, it's scary. Counterpoint, no, it's not. It's not. Sorry, it's not. I mean, yes, there is some gross hardcore shit online, but that's gross in my opinion, but that's not the stuff that's, like, most readily available, you know? Like, the stuff that's most readily available is pretty run-of-the-mill stuff, and everybody knows, everybody has their go-to sites, and every now and then, it is true that every now and then they'll throw, like, the grossest video ever amid a bunch of regular porn videos. And you're like scrolling, you're like, oh, no, oh, stop it. Why'd you put that there? That does happen. But it's not like your son or daughter is going to get into something like that because they happen to see it on the internet. You're either into shit like that or you're not into shit like that. It's not going to develop a taste for you if you happen to stumble across something like that. In other words, if somebody's into it, they'll come across it and it'll immediately trigger something in their brain. And they're like, oh, yeah, I like that. It's never going to be, oh, gross, now let me watch it. Oh, yeah, this is gross, kind of. Actually, no, I like it now. Somebody fist me. That's not how it works. So I don't think online porn is that scary. I think, yes, there's a certain age where, you know, a kid shouldn't. When you're not sexually active and you don't know what it is and you haven't developed, sure, protect the kids from it to that point. But when they get to the point where they're sexually maturing, I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all, porn. You just have to have sex education in the schools and let everybody know what's up and how to stay safe and whatnot. And then I don't think there's anything wrong with net porn at all. And then, man, it really shows you how out of touch they are when one of the women goes, I didn't know there was a website for free porn. You didn't know there was a website. Okay, like 75% of the internet is websites for free porn. That's what it is. You basically just said, I didn't know there was an internet. Like, that's what the internet is. It's fucking free porn all day long. How do you not know that? How old are you? Jesus Christ, people are so silly and in their bubbles and shoving their head in the sand. I didn't know there was a website, as if there's one. Yeah, there's one website for free porn. The rest of them? Yeah. And the rest of the women were like, don't say the name of it. As if there's one site. You could close your eyes and have a hit the keyboard, or have a monkey hit the keyboard, press enter, and it's probably a porn site. Okay, and then, hilarious when Whoopi Goldberg was like, you know, hey, look, this is changing culture. It's not good. I mean, women used to be considered a sign of greatness to have body hair. Greatness? Maybe that's a little overstating for the term greatness. But yeah, oh, it showed that you're mature. Now women are shaving it. Who cares? Who gives a fuck if they shave it or don't shave it? Whatever. It's not like dudes. If all of a sudden women having hairy pussies came back into fashion, it's not like dudes would go on strike. You know, I cannot have sex with you. You have vagina hair. What am I going to do? I'm not going to shove my dick in that beaver thing. It looks like a fucking Brillo pad above your box. I don't want that. No guy's going to do that. Or maybe a small percentage would. But the overwhelming majority would be like, I don't care. I'll shove my dick in there. So who cares if it's shaved or not shaved? But then she says, that led to an uptick in pedophilia. No, no, you can't just fucking say that. And that's totally not true. Again, it's not like when women, grown-ass women, started shaving their pussies that guys were just like, well, I guess now I'm into fucking toddlers. No, that didn't fucking happen, and that is, it's a really fucking horrible thing to say. That's just not true, and you're creating a problem where there is none. It's not like pornography has led to an increase in pedophilia. That's utter garbage. How do you just say shit like that? Okay, and then, finally, at the end, when they're like, well, look, you got to beat them to the, you got to beat the net porn to the conversation, so you got to talk to your, you know, your son about this. Yeah, no. Don't get me wrong. I think you should talk to kids about this stuff, but I think it should really be in school. Never in human history has a mother told their son something about sex, and then the son listened. Oh, well, you know, hey, I was going to do that, but my mom told me in the super awkward conversation we had the other day that I wanted nothing to do with to not do X, Y, and Z. Never happens. Never happens. So, yes, do sex ed and do sex ed from a reasonable age, but have them learn about this shit in school. Don't have that awkward situation where it's the mother telling the son, listen, sit down. Let me tell you about the dangers if you put your pee-pee in a girl's booty hole. Oh, no, mom, stop. Oh. It would just be the grossest, weirdest, most awkward thing ever. So, I think I'm out of things to say about this, but that was just the saddest conversation I've ever seen. They're so massively out of touch. They have no clue what's going on, and they're creating a problem where there is none. Hey, here's the counterpoint. What if net porn is actually good? What? You're not allowed to say that. Yes, I am. If you have a massively repressed society and people aren't fucking and they also aren't getting off by looking at pornography, you got a society full of massively repressed, angry men. And I hate to get all Freudian and whatnot, but there will be more violence in that society. There will be less violence in a free society where they have access to, I don't know, exercise, the most normal, natural thing ever. Like, why are you so afraid? This shit is as natural as it gets. Reproduction. You know, educate people about it, teach them what's safe and what's not safe and whatnot, but do it the right way. And don't flip out when a fucking 15-year-old is beaten off online, because I got news for you. Every fucking 15-year-old, when I was a 15-year-old boy, I was already years into my beaten off streak, and it never stops. So you cannot, don't flip out at the most normal thing ever, because it doesn't have the downsides you think it has. In fact, it probably has more upsides. Okay. Guys, out of time. I will not see you next week, but I will see you the week after. I love you dearly. Everybody have a good one. Mwah. Big kisses. I'm out, skis.